folks. Welcome to another installment of our little, well, actually, I've got Kirsty Dunphy on the line, and I'm guessing, and Kirsty can either refute or agree with this, I bet you her name gets misspelled and mispronounced more times than it's gotten right. There'd be extra E's added in there, and there'd be R's probably. Well, I've heard an R thrown in there when mentioning your name, Kirsty. So I've got Kirsty Dunphy on the line. I first met Kirsty when she was speaking. I had no idea who she was, but she was speaking with a man called John Shackleton for John McGrath. And I was blown away by this young dynamo. And I have then stayed in touch and jumped on her emailing list. I've got books of hers, and I just can't seem to, every time I think I've read everything she's done, Pat Mesiti sends me her new book, which is lovely. So Kirsty's great. I'm going to let Kirsty talk to you about her background. But if you're listening to this and you're anywhere near a computer, go and get on her mailing list if you're not already on there, because I've learnt so as much from that mailing list with the freebies Kirsty sends as I have reading her books and things. So she's certainly very generous with her information. So after all that, welcome to the call, Kirsty.
Thank you. What a lovely introduction. I appreciate it.
No worries. Well, I suppose we should maybe, again, given this is going out to real estate agents, I've talked about just now, I suppose, you as a speaker, but how did your, I suppose, background bring you to the real estate success you had? Maybe give us a little bit of a short back and sides on that.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, my background in real estate started in no way, shape or form out of me looking for some sort of passion in life. It was an after-school job for me at age 15. I was working at a real estate agency here in Launceston, Tasmania, as an after-school filing slave, pretty much. I filed, I got coffee. Sometimes, if I was lucky, I might have been allowed to answer the phone, but only if everybody else was busy, and that's how I got my start, just after school, just doing the grunt work, basically. And then a couple of months on, you know, I started to get fairly good at the filing and the making of the coffee, so I got a promotion, which was very exciting, property management secretary. But all I did was still filing and getting coffee, unfortunately. But that's how I got my start in real estate, 15 years old. And I look young for my age. I'm about to turn 30 next year, which is completely freaking me out. But I still probably look, you know, like I'm in my early to mid-20s. I keep telling myself, but at 15 I looked so young, and to be working in a real estate office where most of the other people were a lot older than me and a lot more mature, I mean, it was just a great start for me, but I was pretty much out of my depth and just there to get a paycheck, basically, just there to get a paycheck so that I could go and do all the other things that 15-year-olds wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Now, I've got to, just because that just set me on a train of thought, that months ago when Pat Mesiti, again, sent me a book of yours and did a little interview and stuff with you, you got to tell my guys who may not have heard that interview about your five-year-old or whatever it was entrepreneurial experience that started when you were barely out of diapers. You got to plug us that one.
Okay, well, absolutely. I mean, my entrepreneurial ambition definitely does go back to when I was five, and most five-year-olds, you know, maybe they want to be a ballerina or a mechanic or a doctor, and apart from a short stint where I wanted to be Madonna, all I wanted to be when I was 5 years old was just like my very entrepreneurial parents. So my parents were always running off and starting a million businesses and having their own investment properties, and I wanted to be just like that when I grew up. But when you're 5 years old and you want to be an entrepreneur and you want to have your own businesses, the types of things that you want as a result of those businesses are probably not exactly the same as, you know, what a grown-up entrepreneur would want. So, you know, whereas as a grown-up entrepreneur, maybe you might be after power or money or employees, as a five-year-old, budding entrepreneur, I wanted cake and toys and lollies and all sorts of exciting things like that. So I decided that the best way for me to get those things was actually to formulate my own business plan, which I did, age five or so, and I decided that I was going to throw myself a birthday party. Seemed very straightforward to me, so I sat down and handwrote invitations to my entire class, and then I think I must have learned a business lesson very early on from my parents about thinking big, so I started to handwrite invitations to all the other classes as well, all the other grade one classes, and then all the other classes in my entire school. So everyone in my primary school received a handwritten invitation to my birthday party. And when the day finally came around, when my birthday party was meant to be on, I got dressed up in my party dress and had that very big long anticipatory wait for the birthday party to start. And then finally the doorbell rang. I raced to the front door, threw it open, and there were two of my friends with presents in hand, parents standing behind them, and I was absolutely ecstatic, absolutely over the moon because my business plan had worked. And then, you know, every entrepreneur encounters some obstacles. My obstacle was in the shape of my mum coming up behind me and saying, "Kirsty, what's going on here?" Because it was actually a surprise party. Mum had no idea about it. It was a surprise party for her. And it was also October, and my birthday's in March. So I learned from a pretty early age about having a failure at a business venture as well. That birthday party didn't go too well, and we moved shortly after that. I'm not sure if the two were related, but with some pretty important lessons about failure, only being failure if you stop trying there. So I didn't. I kept on having all these harebrained schemes right through until I set up my first legitimate business at age 15.
Excellent. I love that. And I, again, the invites to the other classes, I metaphorically think in my head, because maybe that's the way my weird brain thinks, but I think, so at age five, you were affiliate marketing, you were tapping into someone else's list, we could say, in order to gain greater exposure. And I think, man, there are marketers out there right now on the internet that are charging thousands for that information that you could have taught them at five.
If only I had my own seminar company then. Thinking, that's what I should have gone into.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, have you ever heard of Dan Kennedy?
I haven't, no.
Oh, okay, he's one of the big guns in that information, I tell you. He charges thousands to hear Kirsty's five-year-old lessons. And yeah, don't be surprised if there's a blog post to that effect on my blog one day, Kirsty. hey, in my intro, do you get the misspellings of the name constantly?
But I think anyone who's called Kirsty or Christy gets the other one all the time. So there's that one straight off the bat. And then, you know, I can get up and give an hour presentation and mention the fact that I hate being called Christy 10 times, and I'll still get people come up to me at the end of it and go, "Christy, well done, I loved it." So there's that. And my surname's complicated, so that I understand. There's all sorts of weird letters and letters that you'd think would be in there and shouldn't be in there. But thankfully, I've got it set up so that if you Google pretty much any variation of my name, you'll still end up at my website.
I've noticed that. I've tried a few misspellings. I've thrown the R in. I've thrown a couple of E's and extra I's and Christie's or whatever. And you still end up with you. So I think that's cool. You've done well. So I wanted to tap into, given that this is mainly going out to real estate agents, I wanted to talk a little bit about those early years in your career. If you could give us some insight into, I suppose, first off, how your, when you first started in real estate, you mentioned you guys didn't have signs. It sounded like a bit of a cowboy shop. But that being said, knowing you only as I do from 10 minutes chatting at the back of a seminar room and your work, I would suggest, and I'm going to guess, and you can elaborate on this, your clients would never have known that you guys were kind of, let's say, I don't like to use the negative connotations of the word cowboy, but I think you know what I mean when I say that.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, for me, the story I told you about being 15 and starting in real estate, it progressed on to when I was 21, and that's when I decided that with two business partners I was going to open up my own real estate agency. And the reason we had a bit of a cowboy operation to start off with, it's not unfair to say that, is because we started up with no money, basically. I mean, of all the things that you want going into opening up your own real estate agency, you'd like to have some funding and you'd like to have some clients and a website and phones and signboards, and we had none of that on day one opening up. But that just made us scrabble to, A, present that level of professionalism that you mentioned, and we definitely attempted to do that with our clients. And two, just to hit the ground running and basically make sure that we got those things up and running as quickly as possible. I mean, we funded our real estate agency on two personal loans that were obtained for cars, presumably. And we just were creative to try and get what we needed and get things up and running quickly and on a zero budget, basically. So, yeah, the clients didn't know that, you know, we had this lovely two-bedroom apartment as our office, but there was no commercial zoning there. So we met a lot of clients at those properties over that time. We'd sign up contracts in coffee shops or wherever we had to make use of the fact that we had this great office, but it was an apartment and we had no commercial zoning. So there were lots of different things that we did to creatively get around, you know, the way that we started up on a complete bootstrap budget.
And I think that that's the mindset in and of itself. And again, I'll put a little disclaimer here. People who are listening to this, don't do this. But it's the mindset that I wanted to talk about. Whether we can leave the right or wrong discussion out of it, because there's a speaker. Well, he's not a speaker. He's a movie maker called Kevin Smith. And at a keynote talk he was doing to some uni students, one of the guys said, how do you get funding for your first movie? And Kevin Smith said, this is what I did. You get a job at a video shop where you answer the phone. You apply for as many credit cards as you can. And when you answer the phone, don't answer by name, but you just say, oh yeah, Kevin, he's my best manager. And he's right. He's on $65,000 a year. And then pay for your movie completely on your credit card.
That's how Clerks was born.
Clerks,
his first movie.
Right. Have you seen that interview?
I haven't seen the interview. I've seen the movie, and I love Kevin Smith. Yeah. Love his work.
You got to get that interview. It's called An Evening with Kevin Smith, and here he is blatantly saying, if really in his own way, he's saying, if it means enough to you, then you will do whatever it takes.
Exactly.
Hmm. Excellent. Well, let's, I suppose, move on to what tips would you give? And again, this is a blatant plug, you folks. If you haven't already been inundated with me saying, go and buy this book, then please take that point now. Kirsty's book called 1001 Tips in Real Estate from people like Kirsty, but Kirsty self-confessed said, I don't know everything. So she got everyone who does, as well as her, and compiled 1001 Tips. So in three phases, wet these people who are listening to this's whistle a little bit, and maybe some where to start tips. What would be some good where to start tips? Maybe a couple of your best ones out of that book.
Okay, cool. Well, just for the people that are listening as well, that actual program comes as an ebook, so it's all emailed to you. It's a different section every week, so on closing or negotiating or dealing with investors or systemization, and we've done exactly what you said, Glenn. We've found the best people in the world on that exact topic. I've contributed what I know, they contributed what they know, so it's a brilliant project. But basically, if you want to know where to start, I mean, my favourite thing to talk about, and I swear the people that have listened to me a couple of times are probably sick of me saying this, but real estate is, it's not about the company that you work for, it's not about the number of phone calls you make every day, it's not about the getting the biggest price listing, it's about the relationships you form with people. And while all the rest of that stuff is important and forms an amazing basis for what you do, if you're going to be exceptionally successful in real estate, and in fact in any career I think, you need to form those relationships with people so that the next time, you know, Joe up the road thinks of selling, he doesn't hesitate in giving you a call. Or the next time that Mary's, you know, sister's uncle's manicurist comes to her and says, you know, I'm thinking about selling, who should I call? You're the first name off their list. That's the type of relationship that you want to build up. And the more of those that you can actually incorporate into, you know, your year in terms of whatever you do to contact with your clients, the more successful you'll be. So for me, I mean, when we opened up our real estate agency, there were 19 other real estate agents operating in our small town. There was no need for another real estate agency. But the reason I especially wanted to do it was because I saw a need for it to be done differently, and in my mind, in a better way, in terms of the service that we provided to clients. So there's tons of different ways you can actually foster those relationships. You know, I'm a big believer in handwritten cards. I'm a big believer in remembering special dates for people. So remembering those anniversaries of property sales, finding out people's birthdays, staying on top of those sorts of things. But, you know, I would also encourage everyone listening to this to find one area of your business that you can absolutely blow people away in. And in my previous real estate agency, the time that we took to actually do that was on settlement day. Instead of what had previously happened in our business and what happens with most other real estate businesses, and I can say this from personal experiences buying and selling with lots of different other agencies, you know, what happens on most people's settlement day is that they might get a call from the real estate agent or a receptionist, they'll hand over the keys, and then they're on to moving into the property, and the real estate agent is almost a forgotten part of that day. Mm. So in our business, we wanted to make sure that there was some real branding on that person then, of the importance of the real estate agent in that relationship and the importance of that client to us. So what we would do was actually call the client and make time for them to come in on that day to pick up their keys or to drop off their keys, whichever they were, vendors or purchaser. And then on that day, the salesperson in question would also have that appointment made in their diary. When the person came in to the front reception office, they'd be greeted and congratulated, and their salesperson would be called through from the back of their office. As they came through from the back of the office, they'd pick up a pre-prepared gift, so a hamper, some balloons, something, you know, not overly ostentatious, just, you know, perhaps a bottle of wine if they knew that the person, you know, was a particularly big fan of champagne or red wine or something like that, but a gift that was transported with them. But the crux of this story is not about the gift. And I don't want people to go away thinking, okay, to build a relationship, you need to buy someone a gift, because that's not what this is about. What it was about is the salesperson, as they would come through the office, they would gather up anybody else that was in the office at that time. So property managers, administration people, other salespeople, you know, business owners, anyone that was in the office. So there might be anywhere between 5 and 15 people standing behind our front reception wall. One of the people would ring this ridiculously large gong I had installed in our office. And out from behind the reception counter would burst these, you know, say 10 people, all clapping, cheering and congratulating the person who'd just sold or purchased through our company, and they'd present them with their gift, photos would be taken, the extreme marketer in me made sure that while they were euphorically happy from this experience, we got them to sign a waiver saying that we could use that photograph for any future marketing purposes. And then we would just really celebrate that experience with them, and it was an experience that people remembered, that they talked about, that, you know, they left the office feeling amazingly connected to their salesperson, to the company involved, and, you know, they went home and got on the phone, started telling other people it's the best form of marketing we could ever do. And it was the most memorable thing about dealing with our company. That's actually how I got the idea. I was reading a newsletter by a guy called Jeffrey Gittimer, and he said, you know, ask your clients what's the most memorable thing about dealing with you. And I started surveying our clients and was not particularly happy with the answer. One survey that comes to memory is that someone said that one of our sales consultants, it was very memorable when he forgot the keys and had to climb in through the kitchen window. But not exactly what we were looking for. So once we changed it, you know, over 80% of people listed that as the most memorable thing about dealing with us. And, you know, the testimonials that would come in afterwards and the crazy marketer and me again made sure that every letter we sent them from then on actually had a copy of the photograph we took of them at that experience on the bottom of it, just mail merged into the letter, so that we would constantly reinforce that experience that we had with them. So there was a lot of beautiful things we could do around that experience. And while I'm not saying to the people listening that, you know, every office should implement that exact experience, but I think that every office should find a way to knock the socks off their clients in some way, shape or form.
Couldn't agree more. I've got some YouTube stuff up on exactly that, how even the words customer service that we are given so often now by every company, I mean, telecommunications companies and banks are all winning awards for service, and think about what we're actually getting. But yeah, I'm with you that we should be doing whatever we can to get what I call raving fans as opposed to just past clients.
Absolutely.
I looked at your testimonial page on your actual page and I thought, this woman is the testimonial queen. I mean, I got through about 10% of them, and then I just saw how much was still left to scroll, and I thought, righto, point taken, this woman's good.
I think with that, it's just about asking.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, same as in real estate. If you ask, people like to be able to do something nice for you and write your testimonial. So.
And then you put down every single one. I just loved it. What a great idea. And I heard once, I can't remember what speaker it was, said, what's the difference between a testimonial that someone gives freely and between one that is asked for? And, well, again, I'd ask you, what's the difference?
Nothing.
None. That's right. I love it. So, we've definitely, and I'll mention that in a minute, you know, we got to ask for the things.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Alrighty. So another thing I wanted to talk about, we would pretend we've pushed record again here. Another thing that I wanted to talk about with you, Kirsty, was, and it goes back to that just busy being fabulous intro that we played a moment ago. And those sorts of using your words, whether they're written, whether they're spoken, whether they're, you know, on an ad or on a website or on, you know, the words coming out of our mouth, and how that sort of led to your really sold product. Because I've certainly looked at a lot of that material and I love it. And I wonder, is that done by your study of how words work? Because as the people listening to this will know, I'm big on how words sell and things like Write Language by Alan Peace and different hypnotic writing type trainers. Was that really sold designed that way, or is it just a creative thing that was within you?
Well, Really Sold basically came about after I sold my real estate holdings down here in Tassie. We'd built up our real estate agency to a group of 6 offices and got to a position where I decided that I'd sell my interest about 2.5 years ago. And I honestly thought I wouldn't have all that much to do with real estate again afterwards, but it's like a drug. It's quite addictive for me. So one of my first big ventures after selling my businesses was to set up Really Sold. And so it's basically an online portal where real estate agents can get that little helping hand to write better advertisements without having to sit there and absolutely rack their brains for hours and hours. Because, I mean, it came from my frustration in reading different property guides all over the country and in fact in other countries, and seeing, you know, the heading three bedroom house used 27 times, or location, location, location. Oh, I thought there's got to be easier way for real estate agents to, exactly as you say, start using more persuasive words, start using more, you know, eye-catching, more captivating words without necessarily having to waste a lot of their time actually sitting there thinking them up. So the database that we've got for Really Sold, I think we're just about to crack 20,000 different headings, phrases and words in our database, and that's basically sort of quite a collaborative approach. The website actually allows users to contribute their own different headings and phrases, so if they think they've got a sensational heading, they can email it in to us. We've got competitions running on the website, so that's one way that it grows. But we're also pretty voracious readers of different property publications and portals all across the world, so we source the best of what's going on out there and actually make sure that it's available to all our subscribers on Really Sold.
I teach and train hypnosis and persuasion and that sort of thing, and I've said, righto, if you don't want to learn these skills, and this is what I say to real estate people who aren't necessarily, you know, trainees of myself in NLP and other things, I say to them, well, if you don't want to learn this stuff, great, subscribe to Really Sold and don't bother.
You know, that's a lovely testimonial, thank you.
Yeah. Or go to the expense of learning all this stuff yourself, so you can do it yourself quickly. And because I was the same as you, I'd see this nice picture of the Brisbane River with the nice city views or something, and there's the river and there's the city, and you tell me, what do you think the heading was?
City view.
Yeah, river and city views, and I think, oh God, you've just wasted the second most valuable piece of real estate on that ad. The headline, you know. Yeah. So that's an excellent thing. If you haven't checked it out, I think, Kirsty, you've got a free couple of weeks for people. Is that still the case?
Well, typically anyone can sign up to a free 10 days. But I tell you what, if any of the listeners to this actually go to the site, reallysold.com, when you sign up for your free 10-day trial, if you put in the promo code GLEN30, we'll actually upgrade your free trial to a 30-day gift subscription on behalf of Glenn.
Oh, how good's Kirsty, you lot. So, yeah, you also got to get and maybe if you can when they do go to that and your site, Kirsty, your two books, and I thought until the last couple of weeks, I didn't realise there was so many. I clicked on your specials page and I saw all this other stuff. But the two books that I've read are The Advance to Go Collect a Million and Retired at 27. If I can do it, anyone can. And I think there's a little bit of false modesty there, young lady.
How do you mean?
Well, if I can do it, anyone can. That's sort of doing, admittedly, I've been known to do this trick in myself, is sort of underplay myself, you know, as in...
Come on, I think unless you're over 27, that title applies. And honestly, I love what you're saying, and I think it's very sweet, but there's nothing remarkable about me. The only thing different between me and, you know, anyone else sitting out there is that perhaps I've taken action whereas other people haven't.
Mm, definitely.
You know, I've just made movement towards the things that I want.
Mm. Can you talk to us about that? Because that's a topic I'm super passionate about. Did you see the movie The Secret?
Yes.
Yeah. There's a speaker on there called James Arthur Ray, and he talks about one of the things that I thought The Secret kind of missed in that it's fine to have thoughts and it's great to think positively and have those beliefs and get those things in, but the missing thing that I think they didn't spend nearly enough time on in that Secret is if those thoughts and those actions and those things if those thoughts and inner work don't lead you to action, in my opinion, you're limiting your possibility of any changes in your life. How does that relate to yourself?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree, and I really enjoyed The Secret, but I would agree. Yeah, there's that sort of almost missing component. You can't just think fantastic thoughts and think, I want a bike. You know, making movement towards whatever your goals are is to me, it's the surefire sort of step to success. And whatever your goal, like whether, you know, you want to do something for your health and fitness, like run a marathon, or, you know, you want to open up a new business or get a promotion, or, you know, be married for 50 years, any sort of goal, you can break it down into tiny, really achievable steps. And that's all I do. I just chunk all my goals down into tiny, achievable steps and go, okay, today I'm doing this. I don't need to worry about the massive picture today. Just today, just get this done, and I'm one step closer to it.
Imagine, I'm just trying to get the correct words here. Given your upbringing, given, you know, and it certainly must be a well-received story to speak about publicly, things like your five-year-old entrepreneurial mindset and working in businesses, seeing your parents succeed and miss on some occasions throughout your whole life, and how that's affected and really created the success story that is Kirsty Dunphy. Imagine someone grew up without that. Because I know there's one speaker going around saying, whenever you employ, if the person you're interviewing worked in their family's business growing up, that's enough, they're hired. So imagine someone didn't go through that. Imagine someone went through the employee education type system that we've got, where they're learning how to be an employee, and they've got that mindset ingrained at, say, their mid-20s or 30s or something. What steps would you say someone might take to change those really embedded patterns of behaviour that are really not very helpful when it comes to entrepreneurial thinking?
It's interesting, as you sort of speak about that, I'm drawn back to the fact that when people come to me and say that they want to be an entrepreneur and they want to open up like a homeware store, they want to open up a real estate agency, my first question is, have you worked in that industry? Because I think it doesn't matter how entrepreneurial you are, the experience you can gain as an employee for someone else is absolutely invaluable. So it's funny, like, I agree with you, having a long-term employee mentality can be a really difficult thing to shift out of, like that whole, you know, I'm very security sort of minded, I need my safety, I need my guaranteed paycheck. But the first thing I always say to people, like, if you want to go and open up, like, you know, a sandwich store, or if you want to open up, you know, a bowling alley, you need to go and work in that sort of environment first to find out, you know, all the little tips and tricks and different shortcuts that you can learn without your money on the line. So that would be definitely one thing to start off with. But you know what, being an entrepreneur, and this is something that's taken me a really long time to learn, it's not for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You can't force it on people, and so there are going to be some people who constantly have an employee mindset, and I think that that's sensational, because entrepreneurs out there need people to work in their businesses.
Agreed.
So it's got to be within your comfort zone. I always tell people, you know, stretch yourself as much as you can while still being able to get to sleep at night. Like, whether that's, you know, going out buying your first investment property or starting up a new career as a commissioned salesperson, you know, do whatever you can to really push yourself. But ultimately, you've got to be able to get to sleep at night. You don't want to be up at 3 a.m. going, oh my gosh, what have I done? You know, one night of that's probably about as much as I can handle, and then I realise I'm past my comfort zone, so I need to scale it back a bit. So that's why when I bought my first property, the bank would have lent me 3 times as much as I originally spent, but I stayed within my comfort zone, and then it allowed me to buy another property much, much quicker than had I spent my entire limit. Or, you know, when I first started my real estate agency at 21, I knew that it was very possible that it could completely fall in a heap around my shoulders, so I had a backup plan. My backup plan was that I was going to go backpacking through Europe. Not a bad backup plan. And so, you know, the end of the world wasn't going to be the end of the world. If the business failed, it wasn't going to be the end of my world. I always like to have a contingency plan in place, and I always like to stick within my own comfort zone, even if that comfort zone is perhaps a little bit wider or a little bit more stretched than some other people's comfort zone.
Yeah, yeah. That's because I love that, because it's interesting that when, you know, you mentioned you're about to turn 30.
Yeah.
I only first got into real estate not long in your sort of life, about where you are now, is when I first left the pay-as-you-earn type thing. You spend an hour, you get paid $25 or whatever.
And people are entrepreneurs. Business, that's exactly how I look at it. So that was your first step out into it.
Yeah, that was the real estate was my first step away from exchanging an hour for $20 sort of thing. But that's sort of interesting that you made a comment once in a book or somewhere that imagine if they took everything off you right now and you were only starting from now. Well, that wouldn't be so bad, would it?
Yeah, it wouldn't be the end of the world, because the one thing that they're not going to be able to take off you is the knowledge and the skills that you've acquired along the way. I think I must have got that from someone like a Bill Gates or someone that I've listened to along the way, who said, you know, if they stripped me of everything, all my money, all my possessions right now, you know, there's so many innate things that they couldn't take away from me, like my skills, my talents, my relationships, that whoever that person was, whether it was a Bill Gates or someone like that, they knew that they could get themselves back to a fantastically, you know, financially free situation in a limited amount of time.
It's and that brings us back to one of the tips I gave you. I'm a little bit late for the 1001 tips, but maybe the sequel. I put a tip on your website saying that if I could break down the one thing, and a lot of people ask me as a real estate trainer, what's the secret? Implying that the secret, well, that's singular, that there's only one. But my answer to that is the one secret that led me to all of the learnings and all of the understandings was the continual reading of a book. Now, I'm not quite as studious as yourself, and one book a week would have driven me a bit batty, but if it's a book a week and then an hour a day listening to a CD, or 20 minutes a day listening to a speaker or something on a CD, then that would be the secret. Listening to the books, reading the listening to the books, I've even got that wrong. Listening to the tapes, etc. The continual learning that leads to the to everything else.
It does. I mean, I cannot stand it when people say that, you know, A, they don't have time for that sort of stuff, because I'm a complete loser when it comes to that sort of stuff. There are books in my toilet, there are books, you know, in the back of my car. I had a personal training session this morning. I had to wait for 10 minutes for my trainer to show up, so I was there, like, devouring a book. There's, you know, most of us spend more than half an hour in our car each day. There's time for that sort of stuff, absolutely. And then the second thing I can't handle is when people say, you know, I don't have the money for it, because there's a library in every town anywhere that you can get your start on. There are so many fantastic newsletters out there where people put out amazing content for free, like your newsletter, like my newsletter. We've got a whole page on our website with lots of other people's newsletters. So there's really no excuse. And that sort of thing, you know, it does lead to increased knowledge. If you have that mentality that you're going to be a lifelong learner, whether, you know, you finished your schooling or whether you've, you know, done a PhD, that's not the end. You know, whether you dropped out of school at grade 8, like this amazing woman I was speaking to just last week, or whether, you know, you're still studying at the moment, that formal education that you get, that's not the end of it. It needs to be something that you sort of drive yourself towards each day.
Yep, no, I couldn't agree more. And on that, that's true. As I look through your newsletters and stuff, and I hate to sort of say reallysold.com. I mean, get your free trial, guys, and check it out. But there is so much just in the over the year or so, however long it's been, that I've been on the Really Sold newsletter. The amount of free stuff you've given away, I mean, it kind of almost negates the fact that you need to sign up for the program, although you didn't quite send 20,000, but you're right, there's so much good free stuff out there, there's definitely no excuse. I'm with you 100%.
Absolutely.
All right, well, I want to ask you one last question that I was interviewed once, and this interviewer asked me this question, and I thought, oh, consider that question stolen, my man, because that was the greatest question I've ever been asked. Is there anything that you wish I'd asked that I haven't yet?
I can probably give away something fairly exciting if you want the exclusive, which is, we spoke at the beginning of the interview, is there anything I won't talk about? And there's been something I can't talk about for a little while, but something exciting that's just come up, which actually I'm able to announce tomorrow, Tuesday, and seeing as we're doing this interview on Monday, I don't think it'll be put out before then.
No, it won't.
Know my secret?
Please.
Okay, my secret is, I mentioned a bit earlier on that real estate is a bit addictive. I'm actually about to open up a new real estate agency in January of 2009.
Really?
You're hearing it here first. Wow. Yeah.
In what state?
Launceston, Tasmania, a boutique property management agency. So just providing exceptional service to landlords, investors, tenants, and just really looking after that side of things. It was actually a dream I had when I was doing my real estate manager's license when I was 19, 20 years old. So it's nice to be able to go and do that. So we'll start that off on a small scale, probably not bootstrapping it as much as we did with our first company. We'll have phones, let's put it that way. But that's opening up in about 6 or 7 weeks now. Very exciting. It's going to be called Elephant Property.
Okay.
And people can find out all the information at elephantproperty.com.au. You just got my exclusive, Glenn.
Elephant Property. I got to ask, where'd that come from?
Well, what do you think about when you think about elephants? Like, I always think, like, an elephant is this huge lumbering creature, and what we want to do for our property managers is we want to help shoulder the load for them. And I couldn't think of any animal better to do that than an elephant. But also, an elephant never forgets. Surely that's what you want from your property managers.
I like it. And yeah, I can see that if it hasn't been already, that's going to be a well-rehearsed speech by your salespeople.
Definitely.
Excellent. Well, folks, I've been speaking with Kirsty Dunphy. Make sure you get the spelling correct. But if you don't, stick it in Google and you'll find her. author of way more books than I thought, but certainly advanced to go, collect $1 million, retired at 27. If I can do it, anyone can, as long as you take action. And get on that, you know, that ebook that, again, if you're on my mailing list, you will have been emailed a link to get that and really sold. And if you're too lazy to, and this is with all the respect to my people, but if you couldn't be bothered learning some of these eloquent and artistic and engaging and captivating ways to write real estate copy, then let Kirsty do it for a couple of bucks a week or something. So, man, if I could have you for a few dollars a week, Kirsty, you're hired.
We can, but only through really sold, unfortunately.
Yeah, so it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. If ever I can return any favours to you, consider it done. And I'll allow you to say farewell to our people, but thank you so much, Kirsty.
Excellent. Thank you, Glenn, and thanks to everyone who's listening. My email address, in case anyone has any questions, is just kirsty@kirstydunphy.com. And the website with the weekly newsletter that Glenn has so fantastically been plugging for us is just, again, at kirstydunphy.com. Just Google my name, best way to find it. Thanks to you all.